Hey everybody, coming to you here from the edit zone quickly. So before I send you over to the actual introduction, I just want to note that the audio quality for this episode will be a little different than normal. And by different, I mean worse, because I thought this was going to be fairly straightforward to edit. And then when I went to actually edit it, I found that the audio had been mangled somewhere in recording. So I repaired most of that where I could. And some of it was so bad that I had to just retake those parts entirely. So some parts of the episode might sound a little bit disjointed. Hopefully you can still listen to it and enjoy it, because for as much as I'm still unsure a few weeks later whether this show is great or terrible, I know that Kirsten is great and has crystal clear audio as always. So you can hear that and my slightly less dulcet than usual tones right now.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the show. So today we're talking about a show which I'm excited to talk about, but not because it's good or because it's bad. I'm still not quite sure what I think about this yet. But here to inform me and all of you out there on that is a good friend of the show, Kirsten McInnes. Kirsten, how are you doing?
I am doing really well. I am so excited to be here. I'm here to tell you that this show is just good and you should enjoy it. And I will give you every other opinion you're supposed to have over the next however long this takes.
Is this a completely sincere, unqualified recommendation, or is it one of those things where it's so bad it's good, or somehow it's good even though we can't quite figure out why? Like, what's the actual motivation here?
Well, for me, I've always been like a freak with thrillers. I love them. And so it doesn't take too much to impress me at them. And yes, we have to suspend our disbelief a lot in this show, and there are definitely some, you know, plot holes that can make it a little bit difficult to watch. But as long as you are able to completely suspend your disbelief, you will love this show. And if you don't, then I think there's something wrong with you as a person, probably.
It is a lot. Yeah. I remember when I was younger, my mom was just obsessively reading these like crime fiction books. And I realized quickly that you either had the ones that were very, very good, like legitimately good books that would hold up to any kind of scrutiny or criticism. And then you had the very trashy novels that you would just get through in an afternoon for a bit of light reading, and anything in between just didn't really hit the right note for me, but anything that was on either end of that spectrum did the job. And I'm not quite sure which end of the spectrum this is on, really.
Well, and have you read the book for this show?
I haven't. I've heard that it's pretty different in a lot of important ways, but I'm told the show departs quite a lot from the original material.
Yeah, so I haven't read it, but my sister did, and we watched the show together, and she described reading this book as it took her a really long time to get into it, which I think is really common with books with a male voice, but that she could not stop reading. She just had to keep going. And so I think maybe in the book it's more of the second one where you flip through it in an afternoon and it's enjoyable.
On the show, Joe does not come across as sympathetic whatsoever, and there's no subtlety about that or anything, but apparently the message hasn't sunk through for some people. But in the book, it's even more glaring that Joe is just a crazed lunatic psychopath, and there's no way of tricking yourself into thinking that his actions are like gentlemanly or out of any kind of place of kindness or whatever. There's nothing romantic about it whatsoever. It is pure, unadulterated sociopathy. Whereas the show, maybe it's just Penn Badgley doing such a good job of portraying the character or whatever you want to attribute it to. But there actually seems to be some confusion about that for a lot of people.
Well, and the confusion is definitely with people watching the show. And I don't know, maybe they're just used to Penn being Dan Humphrey on Gossip Girl. And so they're already kind of used to him being a little bit of a stalker. Or it could also be just like the marketing around the show. Like when I first looked it up, there are so many articles that say this is a show that will address the question, what are you willing to do for love? And like, this is not a love story. This is not about love. And just framing it in that way is so irresponsible. And it is just, honestly, it's disgusting to me. Like, and the people who are rooting for Joe, I feel like there's like a two-episode stretch in the middle where I kind of understand because you see it from his perspective. But at no point, like, I was rooting against Joe the entire time. I was like, he's got to go.
Yeah, how much of it is just because it is his perspective that we're seeing the show through, therefore he's naturally going to come across better to people? Because you could frame this as almost like a thought experiment to see just how bad a character has to be to not get sympathy as long as you're seeing his side of the story.
Well, I think that is a huge point, because I think we're used to consuming content where there is a clear hero or protagonist that you are supposed to root for, and they're supposed to go through this journey and you want them to succeed. And I really think that it doesn't have a hero or really a protagonist at all. Like, there isn't really anybody in this that I particularly wanted to see succeed or that was a particularly good person. And I think that it's very jarring for people who are used to always having someone to root for to be in a situation where they maybe shouldn't be rooting for people. So they just assume, okay, main character, we root for him.
I guess Ethan maybe would qualify as a good person, although I'm sure he has some bodies literally or figuratively buried somewhere.
Yeah, I would say Ethan is a good person, but we don't really get to see that much of him. Karen is the only person worth standing in this entire show.
Is there some good portmanteau that we can put in there, like a Karen Stanty, or really, the floor is yours if you want it.
Well, no, all of the names in this show are so, like, bad.
Okay.
Like if you look at it, like, just having it in a list in front of me really has it very glaring. It's like, okay, so there's Officer Nico and there's Dr. Nikki. Karen's last name is Minty. I don't care if you're going to say her parents are bad with names. Guinevere Beck is a terrible name. We're in a world where someone can just be named Peach Salinger. Like, are we trying? I feel like at this point, no one is trying.
The one time I related to Beck was when we got a very brief glimpse of her social media handles, and one of them was at Bechdel Test, and I thought, okay, she has the same taste in bad puns as I do. That's the one humanizing moment that we got in the entire series.
Yeah, well, she has a quality Twitter handle, but every time we see her tweet in the show, it's all horrible content, so it's just wasted on her.
And that's just one of many things that, taken as a whole, I find puzzling about You. We often refer to shows as being more or less than the sum of their parts, and this show, every individual aspect of it has something which is either just laughable or seems really just crude or nonsensical or whatever, and yet somehow the finished product is weirdly compelling and watchable, and I don't know why or what it is that makes it so good.
Well, okay, I think you need to stop being so hard on yourself. You can enjoy things. Things don't have to always be intellectually perfect to be enjoyable or even to be good or quality, which, again, I don't know the quality level of this show in general as a piece of, I guess, art. Feels weird to call it that. But one thing to remember is this was originally released on Lifetime. And I feel like that really makes a lot of sense of all this ridiculousness. Okay, so Lifetime movies are, like, they're always just, like, the most ridiculous thing. Like, it'll be about, like, twins who are separated at birth, or the babies that get swapped in the hospital, or, like, crime ones with murderers, etc. But they're always just so cheesy, and this is probably, like, the least cheesy piece of content I've ever seen from Lifetime. And I used to watch, like, Lifetime movies. You can find almost all of them on YouTube, and I used to just watch hours and hours of Lifetime movies when I was in university, because it's just, like, a way to turn your brain off, and it's just so much. And so you kind of come to expect the absolute lunacy. Like, and it might just be because they actually have some established actors, and maybe that brought up the quality of the rest of the acting in, like, an iron sharpens iron kind of way. But normally it's so, like, hokey and so cheesy, whereas in this, like, I very much believe that Joe Goldberg is an absolute sociopath, and it's a little bit harder to buy that in some of their other products. I'm struggling to remember the name of literally any Lifetime movie, but they're almost all on YouTube. Oh, actually, the one that stands out the most to me was, I think it's, they're all, like, loosely based on true stories in general, and it was about 16-year-olds in a small town, I don't know, somewhere in the States, who made a pregnancy pact to all have babies when they were 16 together. That's the one that really sticks out to me.
Fair enough. So I initially got into this because I saw you tweeting about it, that you had binged a few episodes and you were hooked in and you were terrified. What was your experience watching the show like? Did it grab you right away, or did you need to give it some time to sink in? You said your sister typically needs to give it more time than some other types of show. Are you the same way, or were you just in from the get-go?
So I watched the show with my sister. We watched it a few days after Christmas, and we binged all 10 episodes in a row in one day, in the type of just laziness that you could only have in the time between Christmas and New Year's. And I was immediately gripped. Like, the way you hear his inner monologue talking about Beck when she first walks into the bookstore is absolutely terrifying. And I had a moment of like, wait, is this how men like think about women? Because I have no idea. And then as it progresses, obviously it's like, oh no, this is not how the typical person thinks about this. Because I went in with absolutely no expectations. I had heard it was good. My sister had read the book. We needed something to do for her like one day off. And so we went for it. And I was gripped immediately. I did not want to stop watching it, and I did not stop watching it until I was done.
Was there one thing that you can pinpoint that drew you in? Penn Badgley putting in a great performance as Joe, or something about the premise that really hooked you? Or are you just a sucker for shows like this anyway, so you would have been in regardless?
Well, I mean, that last point is very, very accurate. I like any kind of thriller, I will give it a shot more than it deserves every single time. I will finish a mystery novel, even if it's terrible and I already know exactly how it ends. I always kind of give it that, this type of media, a little bit more of a chance. And then I do love Penn. I really enjoyed Gossip Girl. I enjoyed him in Easy A. I was excited to see what he would do with this role. And this show gets described a lot as Gossip Girl meets Dexter, which I don't think is an accurate, you know, like way to describe that at all, because, you know, Dexter has a code and is good at murdering people, and you can kind of root for him because he's only killing bad people, whereas this is not like that at all. But if that's going to get people to watch it, then guys, it's like Dexter mixed with Gossip Girl, and I'll act like I made that up just like everybody else. And then I was waiting to see Shay Mitchell because she is from Pretty Little Liars, which is by far the most trash TV I've ever watched in my life. And a good example of me giving a chance to any sort of thriller that does not deserve it. I don't know what it was about it, but I was immediately gripped, and it kept me gripped for 10 straight episodes, which is not easy to do anymore.
Those Dexter comparisons always seemed strange to me. It's like people are lumping them together, even though they have very different goals, very different personalities. It's almost like once you cross a certain moral line, then the actual details of who you are and what you do get elided, and you're the same person, basically.
Well, and the very key difference is Dexter sets out to be a murderer, you know, leans into this darker nature, and he's very good at it, whereas Joe is, it's almost accidental that he gets to that point because it's a symptom of something else, and he's not good at it. He is so close to getting caught so many times.
Yeah, I understand that the show doesn't work if the police just arrest him and he goes to jail in episode one and then the show is cancelled, but there are times when I couldn't suspend my disbelief at some of what Joe had to do to get out of the consequences of his own decisions. Like when he sent Paco off to buy this list of supplies, which you would only need if you were trying to like disintegrate a body or cook meth or really just do something highly illegal. It's like, how did you expect this to work? You know, like clearly this is not something which any aspiring criminal mastermind is going to consider for a second.
Yeah, I don't think the best move is to give a young child your murder grocery list. Like, I feel like there's a better way to get those things if that's what you really need. I don't even understand how people ever root for Joe, because you can't even be like, oh, he's good at this. Like, he's not good at anything except for fixing books and like stalking people.
What do you make of the reaction to the show and to the character of Joe in particular? Because there have been the usual think pieces and Twitter debates and so on about all of that, but it's scary to see how people are romanticizing Joe's behavior. Even the certain segments of the audience who are likely to be on the receiving end of it and who ought to know better.
I find it so troubling, and I don't know what it says about us as a society that we are so easily drawn into these sociopathic characters. But like, if someone has traits that remind you of Joe, like, you're in danger. You need to get out of there. Like, it's not romantic. It's not a love story. And it like a few of our mutual friends have been texting me their thoughts while they watch this. And they're like, yeah, I like Joe. Like, I'm rooting for Joe. And I'm like, no, we're all rooting against Joe. And you need to get on the right side of history here.
What does it mean to root for Joe? Like, do you want to see him successfully convince Beck that he's that she's head over heels in love with him? And actually, those are her sincere feelings. And so there's some way it's going to work. And then the entire twisted way that he gets there is buried? Or like, what are they actually hoping for, do you think?
I mean, I've got to hope that that's what they're hoping for, because that's by far the least troubling result of all of this. Like, I can't think that people are happy about him, like, actually murdering Beck or anything like that. And like, it's the thing where a show like this kind of normalizing stalking is really troubling to me, because the people who stalk other people almost always end up escalating into other things. And I think that if you talk to the women in your life, you will find that a lot of them have had, like, obviously not like an extreme stalking case like this, but a lot of them will have had experiences with someone who has followed them or has made them uncomfortable in a lot of similar ways to things that Joe does in the early part of this show. And it's just to think of that as like, oh, but, you know, if they end up together, that's fine, is I keep saying it's troubling, but it's just so troubling. And I don't really know what that says about the people who are rooting for him, or if they're maybe just not thinking critically about it. Like, I personally, when I was a lot younger, had not a stalker to this level, but I've definitely had people like follow me home and get my number. And so I'm just approaching it from like more of a personal perspective, but it's just terrifying. Like, the fact that he finds her address so fast and is just outside of her house jacking off so fast is like, this escalates. People who do this move on to much worse crimes almost always. We can't root for him.
And those reactions, you imagine, would tell you a lot about the people who have them. So you can tell based on how someone reacts to Joe whether they have direct experience of being on the receiving end of that kind of behavior, or if it's if they've been able to remain distant from it and it's mostly an abstract thing to them. Or maybe from the other side, if they're people who don't see anything wrong in pursuing someone in a very possessive way, not that they would take it to the extreme that Joe does and be a serial killer or anything, but it's still enough to make you wary. And then I guess you have a third group who might be the most tragic of all, the ones who do have experience of that behavior, but who, if that's their only experience or all of their experiences have been like that, they've been conditioned by that and by society to think that that's how relationships always are, or that's how they must be.
Well, and another thing that like really stands out to me with Joe is that there's so many times where in his inner monologue, we hear him thinking like, there could be some kind of sicko here. What if someone's following you? Or like with Peach, when he's like, stop watching her, what are you doing? And it's just like, to see someone who's so divorced from real life is terrifying. Like, this show is absolutely terrifying. Like, I have a few friends who are like, okay, well, I watched this at the start of the year, and you know what? Maybe I'm not going to go on any dates in 2019 now because I'm scared of
it. I wonder if the way that the show sets this up is going to filter out the people who are going to have the negative reactions that you would think are appropriate to it. Because if you have had that experience yourself, maybe just watching the show itself is traumatic, or you just don't, you're not going to be as set up to enjoy it and to just sit back and think about it uncritically as you might otherwise. And so those people either aren't watching the show, or maybe they quit after a few episodes. But the people who loved it and were engrossed by it and who made it all the way to the end are going to be more likely to be the ones who can see it as just this fun, as they seem to see it, hypothetical.
Well, and I think that there's also, it's important to note, like, there are people like me who find it extremely troubling, do not root for Joe, but still found the show incredibly engrossing and enjoyable and will be back for season two. Like, I don't want it to come across as, oh, Kirsten hates this show. It's in spite of all of the, like, crazy stuff, not necessarily because of it. I was so anxious almost the entire time, and that's not normally an enjoyable experience, but with like a thriller or a mystery, that's kind of what I'm looking for. So it is good in that way. And there is, I'm sure, a lot of other people who watched it and feel the same way and just maybe aren't as vocal about being in love with our new like pop culture sociopath.
Going back to that idea of the show normalizing certain behavior, whenever that charge is made about a show, there's always this debate of how much responsibility lies on the show for presenting things in a certain way versus the audience for reacting to it in a certain way. And I know that Penn Badgley, who plays Joe, has come out and said that he was initially reluctant to take on that role because he thought the script painted Joe in too positive a light. And so he made an active effort to make it very clear, and apparently not clear enough for some people, that this is a sociopath who doesn't have any redeeming qualities, and that given that apparently that didn't sink through for some people, he's intending to ramp that up even further for season two, which might harm the show in a dramatic way, in the sense that like you can't suspend your disbelief even if you wanted to and pretend that Joe is just a normal human being in any regard. But what's your take on that question?
Well, I think that a lot of it comes from the audience. Like, it's one of those things where the culture will always kind of overcome whatever your strategy is. So it doesn't really matter necessarily what the show intended. It matters what our culture is and how we perceive it. And so I think that having Penn Badgley come out and say, no, Joe is not a sympathetic character, this is not good, this is not a love story, and, you know, having more voices that are, you know, setting up that point of view and why it could be a dangerous way to think of things, I think that's what's really important here. Because, you know, stalking is real. People do get murdered. Women are more likely to be murdered by a romantic partner than they are by anybody else, or like others that they know, obviously. And so as long as we're having the open, honest communication and conversations around these topics, like, I don't think it's necessarily bad to have them in pop culture, as long as it's opening productive discussions and it isn't just reinforcing that something maybe is okay that's not okay. And so as long as you're having these discussions, I think that it's okay. And maybe more educated people than me or more intelligent people than me would think otherwise, but I see it as long as we're having the conversation.
Do you think the show can really exist without that kind of mismatch between how people perceive what's going on and the actual reality of the events when you separate them from the show? Because if you just look at the pure facts of the case, it's Joe stalking Beck. It's the same kind of like psychopath, serial killer storyline or drama that we've seen 100 times before. But what makes it an interesting viewing experience beyond just the acting and everything else is that you find yourself maybe starting to get in his mindset a little bit, and then having to catch yourself and realize that you've been played, right? You've been lulled into this false sense of security almost, and you're finding him as charming and as whatever as people on the show do, and that tension or that danger is part of what makes it a better viewing experience.
Well, yeah, that's absolutely part of what makes it compelling, and I think it's a good cautionary tale too, because, you know, a lot of us have met like psychopaths and sociopaths, and it kind of is that viewpoint of, if you meet someone like that and you're their target for whatever reason, they will make you feel like on top of the world, because you will have like the most charm put on you that you could ever imagine. And I think that after someone has a bad situation one time with a person like that, because not all sociopaths and psychopaths, which I know they're different things, end up becoming murderers or stalkers or whatever. There's way more of them than you would maybe think, but you'll normally end up having a bad experience with them. And then after that experience, you're better able to see those signs if you meet another person like that. And so having media with, you know, the kind of compelling sociopath character, hopefully if someone meets a real sociopath, they'll be better able to avoid them and protect themselves based on that media too. So that's a positive that could come from it.
The other thing too is that the classic love story, as you often see in various forms of media, involves an element of chasing. It's, you know, if they just fall in love at first sight, then there's no story, there's no dramatic tension, there's nothing to work through, nothing to fill out the rest of your season. Whereas if it takes some time for the lead and whoever they're pursuing to fall in love, then that is the big moment or the big reveal in the finale. That's the thing that your whole show builds towards, and there's a greater sense of achievement when it finally happens. So whether intentionally or unintentionally, they end up promoting this dodgy message about how that should work in the real world.
Yeah, and I guess that just comes down to what we expect from stories and what it is to enjoy a story or to, you know, fully unpack that. And it's like, even when you look at like a movie like The Notebook, when they first start going out, he like climbs up the Ferris wheel and like makes her accept a date with him. So there's all those kinds of troubling things in all like major love stories, really, that we see, which is probably not a good thing, and certainly not great when it's like, oh, this guy is a full-on stalker, breaks into her house, steals her phone, and then people romanticize it. But I just, as long as people are talking about it, I think that hopefully we can change the discourse a little bit.
And is it also part of what makes Beck relatable insofar as she even is? And I'm sure we'll get onto that, because in some sense, she's this every woman where it's easy to imagine yourself being charmed or enraptured by someone who superficially seems like he's, you know, the perfect handsome prince, right? He's everything you want someone to be. And then it's only when you get to know them better, or if you keep an eager eye out, that you start to see the red flags that maybe they're trying to hide from you.
Well, I don't agree that Beck is an every woman. I feel like Beck is the worst.
Oh, she is. I mean, the thing that you need to make her relatable to any extent is that, you know, like you can imagine yourself in that situation, even if you yourself are very different from Beck. And I hope you are, because as you say, she really is the worst.
I mean, I hope I am. I guess other people that know me can tell me if I'm not. But Beck is like absolutely horrible, and I think that also is part of why people shift back into, you know, thinking of Joe as a hero, because out of the two like main characters, they don't find anything truly connect to with her, whereas maybe they find something in Joe's crazy messed up mind that they can connect to more, because I think everyone at some point has been infatuated with someone, obsessed to the point of like stalking their social media. I think that's like a very like real thing at this point. And obviously most people are never going to go past that, but it is something that people maybe connect to. Like, I know I saw something online where it was like, I'm just impressed at how fast Joe found all of that. And it's like, well, I'm terrified, but okay.
Although if you completely disconnect your moral compass from everything and you remove the fact that Joe is a stalker and then a serial killer, if you don't find the character of Beck interesting and you don't understand why he would be interested in her, doesn't that make his whole entire quest seem even more far-fetched in the first place? It's like, why are you going through all of this effort for someone who really doesn't have that much of an appeal?
Well, and that's a really good point, because he becomes just totally infatuated based off of a 5-minute interaction while he's at work. And I'm sure that he has tons of those interactions every single day. And what is it about Beck that is different that catches his eye or triggers whatever it is in his lizard brain that makes him follow people or be obsessive? And I think that's one of the least believable things of the show, because I just, for the most part, there isn't that much that we see, you know, behind the character that Beck portrays. Like, she doesn't seem real pretty much at any point. And maybe that's a product of it being from Joe's perspective and he's, you know, put her up on a pedestal, but she just doesn't feel like a real character.
The best I've seen anyone say about Beck is that she doesn't seem entirely unsympathetic. They can understand things maybe from her perspective. I have seen almost no one that I can remember say that they actually like Beck or relate to her or would want to be like her or to know her or to really give any kind of fulsome praise whatsoever. It seems like at best she is tolerated by the audience, and at worst she is viciously loathed with a passion that even Joe himself, the star, the serial killer, the murderer, doesn't seem to be able to inspire in them.
Yeah, and I truly could not tell you why that is. That's a little bit wild. I don't know what she does to inspire that level of hatred. I feel like she's not great, but are you really going to put your energy into hating her? Like, that's terrifying.
The thing is, too, that for as much as Bette gets criticized for being basic, and she definitely is, I would make that same criticism of Joe. And it's a weird thing to say of him, knowing what we know, that he has all of these diabolical schemes going on. And if anything, you would want him to be much more basic than he seems to us. But from Beck's perspective, she knows nothing about this. He's just this like charming savior who's come into her life. To her, he is what she is to us as the audience. She's this kind of cipher who she seems nice enough on the surface and clearly very attractive and charming and so on. But where's the beef? You know, what is there beyond that?
Well, first of all, there's nothing wrong with being basic. I don't think we need to be using that as a negative. I'm perfectly comfortable with being as basic as I am, but I just want everyone else to feel comfortable being their true basic selves. Just like what you like, be who you are, and don't let Dom make you feel bad about it. Okay, guys?
Wait, does this also go for me? Should I let myself make myself feel bad?
Yes. Could you be nicer to my friend Dom, please? Come on.
I'll try.
Okay. But I think that's a really good point. And I think that a lot of media right now kind of neglects relationships like that, where they think, oh, because you see a couple of scenes of two people having sex, then we're just supposed to assume that their relationship is all fine and they don't have to show us any of the real, like, day-to-day couple-y stuff that would make it believable. Like, even when she's, like, mostly staying with him and it seems like they're having a semi-normal relationship, it's just a montage with a Joe voiceover rather than actually building to make us believe that the relationship is, like, a normal day-to-day relationship that they're happy in. And that does make it really hard to kind of understand the dynamic because we don't see it. And I think this show should have known better than that, because they have so many scenes where they're showing sex in such a way as not defining a relationship, that they should have, you know, done more to show us the actual relationship to make it a little bit more believable.
What if those sex scenes are with the curtains open on the ground floor of your truly gigantic apartment building? What do you read into that?
Okay, here's the thing. First of all, we're supposed to believe that Beck has the most spacious apartment in New York for free because she's a TA. Now, I work in higher education, and I'm here to tell you that there's no way that happens in Calgary, let alone in New York City. Second of all, why does she live on street level with the largest windows known to mankind and no curtains? Like, get some blinds or something, or wear clothes, or stop having sex and masturbating directly in front of an open window on your busy street.
Does it say something, do you think, that the only people who instantly are onto Joe are also portrayed as being messed up in their own way? So outside of minor characters, I guess Candace's friend is suspicious of Joe from the outset, and there's no reason to really distrust her. And the PI as well, although it's his job to distrust people. That's what he does for a living. So you can understand it from his part. But of the main cast, it's only Peach and Ron. And Peach herself is stalking Beck. So maybe Game is recognizing Game there. And then Ron is this abusive tyrant who, you know, is somehow manages to come across as the villain to Joe's hero in the scenes where the two of them are together. So we don't have, and as you said, there are really no heroes on the show. There are no unequivocally good characters other than maybe Ethan, who obviously never suspects a thing. So are they making a statement there about what it takes to see through Joe's kind of charm, do you think?
Well, that certainly could be what they're going for, and I think that's a little bit dangerous too, because it makes it seem like you can't trust your gut, because the only people who can see these kinds of villains are other people who are bad. I really do like this stuff with Joe and Ron, though, because I think it's nice to have the nuance of he is a bad person, but he still sometimes does good things. And I think that's something that we lose a lot of the time, where people think someone's irredeemably bad, so that means they can never do anything good. And I do like that they show that here.
I agree, but I think maybe there's a crucial distinction between seeing that play out in the course of the same relationship. So sometimes you can treat someone badly and other times you can treat them well. And it's not necessarily a case of putting that on the scales and seeing where the balance comes out to decide if you're a good or a bad person, versus what You does, which is, and but by the way, can we comment on the fact that the show is called You? Like, that's firstly just for like SEO or whatever. It's very hard to find tweets from your friends about the show because it turns out the word You is just a common thing in the English language.
Well, the hashtag is You on Netflix.
Well, there's hashtag You on Netflix. There's also hashtag You Netflix and a few others along the way.
Oh, God.
But then also, what if you're just not a hashtag kind of guy or a hashtag kind of girl?
I don't know what to tell you, but hopefully maybe they'll just, like, season two will be like, You, colon, hidden bodies, so that it's easier to distinguish.
Anyway, the point that I was working towards here was that I think there's a difference between seeing individual relationships as being complex, as having different sides to them, versus what You does, which isn't necessarily a cop-out, but that they achieve the same effect by having some relationships which are very clearly bad in a one-sided way, and then others which are clearly good in a one-sided way. So he's the hero of the pack of knees who saves him from his troubles, but then also he's this weird obsessive stalker on the other hand. And it's like, if you have one extreme over here and one extreme over here, then that by itself is going to lend some kind of duality or nuance to Joe, and I don't think it really works that way.
Well, but I don't think I agree, because I think that the Joe Paco stuff, it shows, it almost mirrors Joe's own relationship with what's the bookstore owner guy's name?
Mooney, right?
Yes, Mr. Mooney. Where we see the flashbacks of Mr. Mooney, you know, being abusive to Joe, and then we're kind of led to believe that that's part of why Joe is the way he is, which obviously we can get into nature versus nurture is a whole thing, but it's almost like Joe is serving that purpose for Paco, and he then becomes more like Joe as a result. And so it shows that it's like, yeah, Joe is doing good things by like lending him books and giving him food, but he's also doing him a huge disservice of, you know, further normalizing really problematic behavior for him. Like, Paco has no good role models in his life whatsoever.
It's kind of a classic trope where you have a character who, by any normal ethical standards, is so far over the line, but we need to humanize him in some way. And one easy way to do that is to have some child enter their life somehow, and they have some kind of fun or cute relationship with them, and that's meant to be this redeeming feature. And that is noticeably absent from the book, and that's one of the big differences between You the book and You the show, where if you don't have Paco there, and then also the inner monologue of Joe, as you hear it, is much more violent and graphic and explicit, then you're going to come away with a much worse impression of Joe than you do from watching the show, even though, once again, they should be equivalent in terms of how horrified you are by them.
Well, and Paco's creepy, so that it didn't work for me.
Paco canceled after he left Beck in that basement to die.
Here's the thing. Paco was canceled before that point. He was canceled probably when he like tried to make Ron overdose.
I feel like that was a proportionate response.
That's not okay. It's not okay. Like, he has to do something, I guess, but it just indicated that he's not going to be okay. And I really worry for what the rest of Paco's life will be. Like, in 10 or 15 years, will he be the next, like, crazy stalker murderer?
I wonder if, coming back to this thing about how people seem to have Joe and Beck out of place in, like, the virtue ethics power rankings or whatever, do you think part of it is that, not just that Joe is the protagonist, although that's a crucial point to return to in a second, but also that his behavior is so far outside the bounds of like conventional action that it's easy to treat it as this thing which only exists in the realm of the show, whereas for Beck, her flaws are much more human and recognizable, and things which we all recognize from our own lives, whether it's in the cheating ex or the friend who's self-involved and unreliable and unempathetic, or all of her personal flaws, whatever they happen to be, are much more you can easily identify those, whether it's in yourself or in people who you wish didn't have them. Whereas with Joe, you hopefully, for most people, they don't have a Joe figure in their lives, or if they do, they've managed to run far, far away.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. I think that's probably a big part of the problem, is that he's so divorced from reality that people are like, oh, it's okay, I can root for a villain, I love to root for the villain, and it's a little gross, but they're able to overlook a lot because it is fiction and it's so outrageous.
You see the same treatment of Joe, or at least rooting for him, that you do in some of these other anti-heroes throughout, especially prestige dramas, which you is not a prestige drama. I would not elevate it to that level or give it that title, but in things like, you know, Breaking Bad, Mad Men, The Sopranos, this is a common thing throughout TV and film, that you have these supposedly complex and deep and brooding, like, male anti-heroes who end up as this sympathetic figure for a large percentage of the audience. And I wonder if you think there's any continuity there, but also if there's a crucial difference that, in Joe's case, it seems like it's part of the female fan base too, just wanting their own Joe, and that's scary in itself.
And here's the thing. I don't watch a lot of TV, like dramas, so I can't really, like, have a good opinion on a lot of that, but I think it's that so much gets romanticized in you and in other media that it makes it feel okay to want someone who's going to put all of their time and effort and thought into you and your relationship with them. And if someone were to actually experience it, I think they would maybe see it a little bit differently. Like, even in a non-stalking way, being in a relationship with someone who doesn't have anything else going on outside of the relationship really is not a good place to be and is not an enjoyable experience. And I think that if people were to experience even that, they would maybe have a harder time, you know, rooting for the relationship or wanting their own Joe.
Yeah, it's always struck me as odd how there is a massive fan base for any kind of, like, true crime story or that idea of, like, the smart serial killer who has a troubled past or whatever. Like, that is something you see over and over again because it works, because it's been proven that there is a devoted audience for that kind of thing. And not just an audience which will take an objective but critical stance on the show, but one which will be very heavily invested in those characters and romanticize them as, you know, you're far outside the bounds of the canon. They'll get their own weird form of obsession with those characters. And I've never quite understood that. And my philosophy usually I try to subscribe to is just let people enjoy things. But I do have to wonder a little bit when you see, like, Hannibal and all these other figures in TV and film, and then also other people in real life, just get this massive fan base somehow.
Okay, but here's the part where I'm a giant hypocrite, because Hannibal Lecter is my favorite fictional character of all time. I am a huge fan of the Hannibal series, except for Hannibal Rising. And I am a big, like, true crime person. And, like, people being obsessed with true crime has existed for so long before we had TV or movies or, you know, widely available, like, paperback books. And it's one of those things where people enjoy it, obviously, for different reasons. And the best explanation that I've ever heard is that we as humans are afraid, and especially the things that we don't understand or the parts of humanity that maybe we don't have, we find that fascinating and we find it terrifying. And to learn more about it or consume more content with that is a way to deal with the anxiety and to move on from being afraid. And that's kind of the perspective that I take towards true crime. But then you get people who are like, oh, I'm in love with Ted Bundy. And it's like, well, that's the whole next level of you need to stop.
Yeah, I can kind of understand the idea of if you embrace or make light of this ultimate danger, then actual or more realistic dangers and more common dangers seem that much less threatening. And I can see how that might work. But this whole thing of unironically, sincerely romanticizing literal serial killers is will always be baffling and always should be baffling. And if it ever isn't to me, then I need to check myself and wonder what's gone wrong.
Yeah, and I think that is a very good point. It is absolutely baffling. I also do not understand it. But I do think that the vast majority of people who are fascinated by true crime or crime series, I don't think most of them are coming at it from the perspective of, oh, I love this one, or this is my favorite one. It's a lot more of, I find this interesting and I don't understand it, so I'm curious about it, rather than being like in love with it. I think that it's very over-exaggerated how many people are actually romanticizing real murderers. But then people will marry murderers while they're in prison, which, that's crazy to me, but okay.
Right. Like, you see Stephen Avery's revolving door of prison vibes, right? But I also, for the record, I'm a massive hypocrite here, because I opened the show by talking about how I would borrow my mom's like trashy true crime books, and it's like, yeah, I will fully admit to that. I'm part of the problem.
Well, here. And it's like, I just think it's very human to have at least some level of like voyeurism towards that kind of stuff. Not stalker level voyeurism, mind you, but it's taboo, and so I think we're drawn to it.
What else do you have in the form of just miscellaneous observations about the show then? Because I, as you can tell, I struggle to know what to think about it or what to say about it, but I'm curious if you have any like more definite perspectives on anything.
Well, I would like to know more information about, you know, Mr. Mooney. Like, did Joe actually do anything to him? I'm a little bit curious, because I could definitely see that as something that happened. I'm kind of curious as to where we're going to go from here.
I'm curious too, but I'm also a little concerned, because to me, this is exactly the type of show that should be a one and done style thing. Even if that first season is good and would be deserving on merit of a second season, I think they can just wrap the story up like this. You know, that the therapist gets framed, maybe a little unbelievingly, but unbelievably, but that's fine. You know, you can suspend your disbelief for that long. But there's no way you can damp this down going into a second season. You have to escalate this further and further. And as as the body count gets higher and higher, he's going to have to find even more inventive and crazy ways of avoiding suspicion and new stories, new webs of lies that he can weave. And I worry that it's just going to be too much. It's not going to be like the central premise of the show is Joe and Beck have this dynamic which seemingly works for a lot of the audience. And with Beck probably out of the picture now, I don't know if Candace stepping in is going to be able to fill that role.
Well, and I'm curious, is Candace actually still alive, or was Candace coming up at the end another hallucination? And so is season two going to be Joe kind of dealing with the reality of what he's done? And that's something that I could really see. And so maybe we'll see more hallucinations with Candace as well as hallucinations with Beck, or maybe Candace is somehow alive and then it's going to be very similar maybe to season one, but with the Beck hallucinations instead. That's possible. I think that one thing that's going for it going into season two is we do have the basis of another book by the same author, you know, in the same universe. And though the books are different, it at least gives some sort of grounding or reason maybe for the rest. And I haven't read them yet. I actually just bought them both for my Kindle. So that's what I'm going to be doing tonight, is starting to read them. But it's going to be very interesting. The other thing is that everybody needs a friend like Karen in their lives. Karen is the only one who's got her mind straight in this entire show. She's a loyal friend. The only thing that's a little weird is that she didn't question the weird book dungeon. But other than that, like, we stand Karen, and hopefully she's okay.
Yeah, find yourself your own Karen Minty in your life.
Yeah, everybody needs the Karen Minty.
And you could maybe use an Ethan as well, just to keep you grounded. But some combination of those, so I think, is the right path. But maybe there is more cause for optimism here because you have the books as source material to work from. But I think it's increasingly a problem with these, with like Netflix hoovering up all of these different originals, shows and so on, where the moment one of them receives any kind of critical acclaim, it's guaranteed to have a second season, regardless of whether in its own universe, that would actually make sense, and all the loose ends can be tied up neatly.
Well, and just for some information on that, season 2 of You was actually approved by Lifetime before season 1 aired at all. They had given it the green light.
So even if it was a massive flop, they still would be charging on.
Well, I mean, they could probably still cancel it, but it had already been ordered before it ever aired at all. And so Netflix bought the rights to season 1 and season 2, and they will be producing it from now on. And I think that's a very good point. Like, I feel like it's just like Stranger Things. Like, I was done with it after season 1. I was like, I like how this ended. This story is over for me. And so I didn't watch season 2, and that's a choice that people can make with this show as well if they like the way that it was wrapped up with a nice little bow. Honestly, a little bit too neat. Well, I think that something that we see in almost every Netflix original is that they tend to employ shock tactics to try and gain success. So I think that we can probably expect a lot of scenes of like very graphic sex that we weren't anticipating, or something that's just really, really violent that we weren't ready for, and things along those lines, because I do think that they in general tend to rely on that a lot in their original shows.
So it sounds like you are hopeful for the second season then, and you're looking forward to it whenever that comes down the pipeline.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch it. I will give it the chance. I feel like I do want to see what happens next. I'm very curious as to whether Candace is actually alive or not. And if she's alive, where she's been, what happened, like, was her second Instagram account just a bunch of green screen stuff that Joe made? Like, I don't know. I'm very curious and interested to see what happens next.
Any shots you want to call? Any predictions, hot takes, anything like that?
I honestly, there's going to be more murder. There's going to be more stalking. And I have no idea what to expect. And I think that's what I like about it, that it's so ridiculous that you can't make like a strong prediction. Like, after episode 1 or 2, would you have anticipated the show to end quite how it ended?
It felt like either that there was going to be some big reveal when Beck learned the truth and either escape his clutches and he would be caught, or she would have to die to maintain his cover. So that's why all the people saying that they were just shocked that he ended up coming back. I just don't understand that. But I didn't have a clear sense of what I was saying beyond that.
Well, I think it was just because we got that moment that was so satisfying of her tricking him and her trapping him, and it seems like she's out, and then it just switches so fast. I think I can see that that's kind of where the shock comes from. Like, Paco is literally an accessory to murder now. And I don't think anyone's talking enough about that.
what do you think the future has for him in season 2?
Well, I don't think we're going to see him. Like, it seems like he's gone. It seems like the majority of the main cast, the recurring cast, and the guest cast is all going to be gone for season two, which is very weird. I feel like normally North American content is very protective of their cast and want to keep their main cast. It doesn't seem like anyone really has plot armor here. So, I mean, anyone could die at basically any time.
Yeah, it's weird, because if you have enough faith in the premise of your show and in your cast and in your actors to go ahead with this in the first place and to follow through to its conclusion, then why wipe the slate clean going into the second season when you're taking a whole new set of risks, basically, with the replacements?
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit lazy to just take Paco out of the scene. Like, I think it would be very interesting to see how he develops and reacts. And I would assume that if he is in season 2, it's going to be, like, through phone calls or something like that.
But maybe he is the real criminal mastermind here. He'll get away with it as Joe ends up rotting in jail.
I can only hope that Joe ends up rotting in jail. That is what I would like to see from this show. Oh, and there's one like massive plot hole in this show that we cannot have a podcast about it without addressing. Beck's original phone is an iPhone, and that's why he's able to see her messages on her MacBook. And then her new phone is a Samsung. And so the whole theory of it communicating through the cloud doesn't make any damn sense because a Samsung and Apple products don't communicate together that way. And nobody is talking about that. And I immediately noticed it. I don't think it's something that's obvious to everyone. Like, my sister did not notice that it was not the same phone, like exact same type of phone. But you see very clearly when she gets her new phone that it says Samsung on it, and her original phone had to have been an iPhone or it wouldn't have communicated with her laptop like that. So,
well, now anybody who watches that will just be hung up on that the moment they see it. So thank you for speaking your truth and enlightening all of us to that.
Everybody needs to know. Like, it's such a big like part of the show that he can go on her phone and it's somehow exactly the same with both of them, even though I would assume that the SIM card in the original one is gone, so it has to all be through the cloud. Doesn't make any sense, and they must think we're stupid to have not noticed.
So that about does it for me. If people want to be finding you on social media and then maintaining a healthy and respectful distance afterwards, where can they be doing that?
So I'm on all social media at Kirsten Said What. Please, please ask me anything about you. I will tell you what to think. And if you love Trainwreck TV, check out, I do a weekly Riverdale recap podcast over on KowskiCast.com. That's Cow with a K. And it's even more crazy than you.
All right, people, that's the end of the show. You can find me on Twitter, of course, at DomHRV. But more importantly, if you made it this far, thank you for sticking with an episode which came to you a lot later and in a lot messier form than I anticipated. But I'm glad that I finally get to share that with all of you. So thank you for making it this far. And we will talk to all of you again soon. Take care, everyone.